When a call came from Hollywood, he was reluctant to go.
The Howl of the Wolf Movie. Presenting honest stories of working people as told by rich Hollywood stars.
But Amy insisted he was good enough and insisted he had to go for the love of his people.
When he went and did the audition and he got the script and he come back home and he read it through, then they would have a family meeting and whoever was there, and there was a different question: is this good for Indian people? And that was his own little prayer too before he went out to do something. You know, was help me to do the best that I can do here. Great spirit, so that it has a good effect on all people.
His first Hollywood film was with Glenn Ford in Smith. Though a successful film, the offers didn't roll in. He continued acting in Canada, often with his sons Bob and Leonard, and his daughter, Amy Marie.
You have a right to your father's name. These other people, do they know who they are? Remember your heritage. Smanastu. That's all you have.
But Hollywood called again, and this time it stuck.
I am blind, but cannot fight. But I won't run. If it's my day to die, I want to do it here within a circle.
There he was across the road, and he had this long, flowing, you know, silver hair, and he looked so regal. I mean, it took my breath away. And I went over to him, and as I reached him, I became more intimidated by the moment. And they introduced me, and I said, put my hand, and I said, it's a pleasure to meet you, Chief. And he looked at me, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Where's Faye Dunaway?"
Grandfather, the river is part of the great circle of the waters of the earth.
That's true. The soldiers would kill us before we could get to the river.
Grandfather, you didn't see any soldiers in your dream. And that means that they can't see you now.
You think so?
Yes, yes. What else did your dream mean?
I think you're right.
Then let's go to the great circle of the river.
Invisible. I've never been invisible before.
When Dan would say, "Welcome, my son, do you want to eat?" you knew that that was that carried with it a lifetime of hungers, of places and times when he had been hungry. And he knew that that was the first thing that you offered somebody. And it was always true when he said it, always true.
I'm marching to dinner, 'cause God Almighty, I'm hungry. Yes, I'm hungry, safe and sound and hungry.
We're hungry!
Of course you're hungry. I'm hungry. We're all hungry, so... let's eat.
Let's eat!
And he said the word, and we ate it. Hot dog! And what was the word?
Hot dog!
Hot dog, yes, dear friends. A mighty hot dog is our Lord. I'm not talking about hate. No, I'm talking about eight. Dinner at eight. Let's eat!
Sugar.
Ah, the glories of food. The communication of communion. Ethelman Rosenberg, I'm passing among you now with the plates. I want you to
must be 4 o'clock in the morning.
Those condiments there.
I
want you to feel your
I sure
body
am
your
hungry.
Mind with the thoughts of the dear friend, Jesus said, let us be as children.
No cookies,
children do, they stop themselves from day to night, they eat.
Lots of green maraschino cherries, half a jar of mayonnaise. Oh, that's my mascot. Laughing cow cheese. Oh, Jesus. Oh, it's my mouth dry. I'm so hungry. There's nothing to eat here.
God knows, I am a patriot. I loaned the country $400 billion, and I want my $400 billion back. Does that make me a bad guy? I've got to eat too, you know. So I'm giving the president until the end of September this year to pay me back, or else I'll be forced to foreclose. What can I do? I've got to eat too, you know. Does that make me a bad guy?
Am I still in this world?
Yes, ma'am.
Hey. I was afraid of it. Well, sometimes the magic works, sometimes it doesn't.
I said, do you think that's true, that there is such a thing as a good day to die?
Everyone's a bozo on this bus. Zips and Bean are sitting next to us. Are you a hostage? Are you a spy?
Just some bazooka who's prepared to die.
Do you think that that's what we all want? We had many conversations over the months. That what we all want to do ideally is not die, but since we have to die, then maybe the next best thing is to be prepared to die. And I think what he understood was that the only way you can live is to be prepared to die.
Back home, the celebrations began. Chief Dan George was already a household name in Canada. His people were proud, and Amy was proud, but she was also amused at his fame.
He come home and he says, the strangest thing happened to me today, honey. And my mom says, oh, what's that? And he goes, this woman asked me to bless her. She came right up to me and she said, Chief Dan George, bless me. And she knelt down too. And what did you do? My mom said, she says, I blessed her. I put my hand on her head and I blessed her. She goes, who do you think you are?
This is your new father, Father Corona.
Down on your knees now. Do you recognize what I'm holding over your heads, lads?
It's a cross, the symbol of the quartering of the universe into active and passive principles.
God have mercy on their heathen souls.
What the father means is, what is the cross made of? Gold. Have you got any?
No.
What about the seven cities of gold? Phoenix, Tucson, Las Vegas?
This is gold.
What's that?
Corn.
Hey, corn! Now we can make tortillas!
We've been waiting for this for hundreds of years.
So this is all you got?
Yes, but aren't you the true white brother who's supposed to come and live with us in peace?
Sure. Therefore, I claim this rich verdant of pasture land in the name of the Empire of Spain.
Hey, Capitano, the rain, she's a stopper to fall, and the corn, she's all dead.
Shut up, Vespucci. I claim this stinking desert in the name of the Empire of Spain forever. Let's go.
God bless Vespucci land.
Oh, by the way, Domini, you're all Catholics now. God bless you.
Come on, and Father. Nobody in their right minds would live in this stinking desert.
Come on, Cisco.
Little Big Man was a historic film, a Western like no other Western. This time, the Indians weren't the bad guys. The very image of Indians was transformed from the old Hollywood stereotypes and myths. We were now human beings.
I think we did, to a sizable degree, change the image of the Native American in American film. And if we did that, I would be very proud and very grateful, because it was such an ugly image, such a constantly ugly image. It was the rationalization for genocide.
This is a line of Indians leaving Rancho Malario to make room for you. Here's the beautiful Trail of Tears golf course.
A dreadfully fatal intermittent fever broke out in the lower parts of this river about 11 weeks ago.
In the month of August, the intermittent fever began to shake its burning, freezing subjects.
Prior to the year 1830, when the Aiguan fever was not known to exist,
the epidemic ague, which has swept away great numbers of the natives, commenced in 1830.
Was not known to exist. The main disorder is an intermittent fever which has carried off all or nearly all the Indians.
Since the year 1829, probably 7/8 have been swept away by disease, principally by fever and ague.
The fever and ague was not known in this country before the year 1829.
Prior to the year 1830, when the ague and fever was not known to exist.
Was never known in this country before the year 1829.
Was not known to exist.
In 1829, attacked by fever, attended with ague.
The intermittent fever has appeared at this place.
There are a great many Indians here at present. Some few of them have the ague.
On the Sacramento River, we are informed by the Indians that they have no traditions of any similar scourge in past time.
There appears to be some sickness prevailing among them resembling an ague.
When the ague and fever was not known to exist.
We are informed by the Indians that they have no traditions of any similar scourge in past time.
The fever and ague was not known in this country before the year 1829.
No traditions of any similar scourge in past time.
Was not known to exist.
They have no traditions of any similar scourge.
Was not known to exist.
Never known in this country. Country.
Was not known to exist.
No traditions.
Since 1829, an intermittent fever has carried off vast numbers of the Indians.
The symptoms are a general coldness, soreness, and stiffness of the limbs and body with violent tertian ague. Its fatal termination is attributable to its tendency to attack the liver.
The Indians of the Columbia were once a numerous and powerful people. The shore of the river for scores of miles was lined with their villages.
Upwards of 100 individuals were writhing in agony on the floors of the houses.
I have found the Indian population in the lower country below the falls of the Columbia far less than I had expected. Since the year 1829, probably 7/8 have been swept away by disease.
So many and so sudden were the deaths which occurred that the shores were strewn with the unburied dead.
Whole and large villages were depopulated and some entire tribes have disappeared.
The intermittent fever has appeared at this place and carried off 3/4 of the Indian population.
The Multnomah Indians have become as a tribe extinct.
The shores of the river were strewn with the dead and dying.
For only a few years since, they numbered upwards of 100, while now they are said to be less than 30.
The fever and ague have swept off the whole tribe.
Some sickness prevails among the Indians on the Feather River. The villages which were so populous when we passed that way in January seem almost deserted now and have a desolate appearance.
The few wretched Indians who remain are lying apparently unable to move. It is not starvation, as they have considerable quantities of their winter stock of acorns remaining.
The natives along here seem even more wretched than those on the Feather River. The villages seem almost wholly depopulated.
The fever and ague was never known in this country before 1829.
The unhappy wretches are found in ones or twos in little thickets of bushes.
Some sickness prevails among the Indians on the Feather River.
Only two women are left. The Indians are all dead. Only two women are left.
As a tribe extinct. To have nearly become extinct in consequence.
The fever and ague was never known in this country before 1829.
On the whole, our available information gives the impression that the mortality rate ran somewhere between 40 and 100%. The latter value is undoubtedly excessive, although, to be sure, the incidence, as opposed to the mortality, may well have reached that figure. 40% seems too slow. At this point, it will be remembered that the evidence pertaining to the malaria epidemic on the Columbia River indicated a mortality among the Indians of approximately 75%. Since all the circumstances were very similar in the two regions being considered, and since what California data we have support rather than disclaim the conclusion, we may set the mortality in California at the same value as for Oregon, that is, 75%. That is, 75%. That is,
the unhappy wretches are found in ones or twos in little thickets of bushes.
75%. This is a startling and disturbing result. It means that fully 20,000 natives of the Great Central Valley died in 1833. My own opinion is that this figure is too small. It means that three quarters of the Indians who had resisted 70 years of Mexican and Spanish domination were wiped out in one summer. It means that the red race in the heart of California was so crippled that it could offer but the shadow of opposition to the gold mining flood which swept over it in 1849.
We are informed by the Indians that they have no traditions of any similar scourge in past times.
The fever and ague was never known in this country before the year 1849.
Prior to the year 1830, when the ague and fever or any disease resembling it was not known to exist.
Malaria epidemic.
We are informed by the Indians that they have no traditions of any similar scourge in past times.
We did obliterate practically an entire race of people, maybe in a shorter amount of time than it has ever happened before in the world. And here we were in 1968 or 9, making a kind of mainstream Hollywood movie that tried to address itself to that fact. And here was a man who was representing his people, and he was out there without malice. If it was conscious, it was an extremely effective choice, because I think that's what got through and was the heart of the film, was his heart.
Little Big Man became a hit and earned Chief Dan George an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor in 1971.
We arrived in Los Angeles, and when we stepped off the plane, there was just press, all asking questions.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
A little closer this way.
And they said, "Do you think you're going to win the Academy Award?" And he says, I don't think the white men come along that far that they'd honor an Indian that much." their faces were all smiling, and and that seemed to be the end of the interview. We got in the little cart, and they took us to a limousine. We went to the Beverly Hilton Hotel. They're clamoring for him. The phone rang steady. The Life magazine wanted to come in and do a whole layout with him and myself. I was really sure he was going to win. Oh, I closed my eyes and just put my head on my lap. I couldn't even look up. Then they said this other name, and I felt, well, that's that, it's over. You know, like the anticipation leading up to it was almost unbearable. The next morning, they told us we had to leave our room. Life magazine canceled. And they even gave us, we had our airplane tickets, and we were just whisked right out of there.
And everybody was upset because they said Daddy should have got it. But when he came home, and I said to him, "Are you all right about it, Daddy?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "I would have only wanted that statue if Mom was here for me to bring it to." He said, "So I didn't really care."
Outlaw Josie Wales was another watershed film. Directed by Clint Eastwood in 1976, it was a pivotal role for Chief Dan George.
First time he was to go on camera with Clint, he said, "Are you ready, Dan?" "Yep." And he kept looking at my dad. "You have any problems? I'm just waiting for you to give direction." He put his hand on Dad's shoulder and said, "How is a white man going to tell an Indian how to act like an Indian? Just do what feels good, Dan." I'm sure it'll be okay.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Name's Josie Wales.
I've heard of that name. Some said you'd be headed this way. And they said a man could get rich on reward money. He could kill you.
Seems like you was looking to gain some money here.
Actually, I was looking to gain an edge. I thought you might be someone who would sneak up behind me with a gun.
Where'd you ever get an idea like that? Besides, it ain't supposed to be easy to sneak up behind an Indian.
I'm an Indian, all right. But here in the nation, they call us the civilized tribe. They call us civilized because we're easy to sneak up on. White men have been sneaking up on us for years.
That character was the most like he was. Sort of mischievous and a sense of humor in the twinkle in his eyes.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I'm getting better sneaking up on you like this. Only an Indian can do something like this.
That's what I figured.
You figured?
Only an Indian could do something like that.
Before he went on camera, he studied his lines. Before we went on the show, if he was to sing some songs, even when we had rehearsals, he'd rehearse by himself. He worked hard at what he'd done. He wanted to be the best.
There is an endless supply of white men, but there always has been a limited number of human beings. We won today. We won't win tomorrow.
Raven flies up Lynn Canal. You could be taken, Raven, by the flat green water. An eagle can be taken by a salmon. You could be taken by the mountain's claw, by the blue ice. A brown bear can be taken by a man with a beard, by his microwave oven. You could be taken with instant coffee in under 3 minutes, by his microwave oven. Taken, Raven, in your bachelor's quarters by the United States Army in your noisy rubber boots. He can be taken. He takes you to the water, inquires about your power. Can you make the ice thunder? He takes you to the forest, needs you to climb where the roof should be, lift beams to a house in the trees. The ice splits ink blue and drops. Raven hears thunder, rises, sets the great beams just so they slip in. You take him because he can be taken, Raven. He takes you out of love and commerce. Raven's language lesson. Raven cries, halibut, eagle, cat, snow. He cries, ladder, hill, wolf. He cries, my hand, his uncle, his forehead, his eye, pitcher. Raven cries, you smell like Raven. You wear Raven's nose. You are Raven's slave. Raven answers, his finger, herring eggs, dog fleas, brown bear, rice, rope, his mouth. Raven, garden, quail, you. Raven says, dental, lateral, alveolar, palatal, velar, uvular, glottal. Raven says, labialized, again says, here's looking at chew, kid. Telling lies, Raven spill from his mouth onto the cedar chips. Telling lies, Raven spill from his mouth onto the blankets. My fish, my tree root, owl, starfish, moon.
Throughout his life, Chief Dan George had put his family first, working hard to sustain them. But the family of human beings was also in his heart, and he wanted so much to make the life of his people better.
Not because I wanted fortune and fame, but because I wanted to raise
the standards of our Indian people here in Canada.
So in 1967, when Canada was celebrating its 100 years, they approached us to come and be part of a collage of people. And we didn't feel good about it. So they said, why don't we put together a speech that will tell the people how we feel about their 100 years of celebration in Canada, what it's been like for Indian people.
Oh, Canada, how can I celebrate with you the centenary of this 100 years? Shall I thank you for the reserves that are left me of my beautiful forest? Shall I thank you for the canned fish of my rivers? Shall I thank you for the loss of my pride and authority, even among my own people?
His greatest significance was that he drew the attention to us so that people had to look at us. And his soliloquy that he did on Canada's 100th birthday said everything.
So humbly and sincerely, I beg of you tonight to walk the next 100 years hand in hand with love and peace. As long as the sun will rise, as long as the grass will grow, as long as the rivers flow, I have spoken.
I think the legacy he left me and my brothers and sisters is hope. Hope and respect.
Well, anyway, the history of the Indians, this is a look at it. And as I say, you can just shuffle up this history any way you want. It doesn't matter, really, where you start, because it always comes out the same. When you saw them, you knew how they moved. Like bison or grass fire, slowly. The sum of those things you know is what they were beginning to forget, and I reach past what I know to remember them. When it was all gone, all of it, there was still a center. They never knew you kept it. They knew what they were doing, like dull birds scraping the sea in the short grass, but never wandering, always with death in their bellies. Some tried to make the land grow, but could not understand the way life came from it, and could not understand isolations and distances. So they came, with their names as baggage, their men's names forgotten, and you watched while the maps were drawn and the rain stopped falling. You, old man, after the last fight, you walked up to their eyes and spit their bullets out of your shirt. They knew what night was, but had forgotten about the stars, except mariners, and it's hard to change the sea much. They couldn't kill water like men. Some knew what to do with where they found themselves. They found its corners. Their eyes are eagles now. They move. You went running. Footprints in the grass, animals in the leaves. My mouth breaks against your language. They were coming. Rising, you speak. The understanding is not words, but split rocks and corn growing. They need to know which way the wind blows. To play the victim, they fought the battle first. You ran bravely. But just to show you how this always turns out the same, you know, you have to shuffle a deck of cards 7 times to truly shuffle a deck of cards. Did you know that? It's a true fact, a true science fact that I've learned from my years in now dealing with the professional science writer. 7 shuffles. Of course, you have to get the cards in between each other to make that work. It's hard. But seeing as how you're in the mood up there on the mesa, you old man, after the last fight, you walked up to their eyes and spit their bullets out of your shirt. They knew what they were doing, like dull birds scraping the sea in the short grass, but never wandering, always with death in their bellies. Oh, they knew what night was, but had forgotten about the stars, except mariners, and it's hard to change the sea much. They couldn't kill water like men. Some knew what to do with where they found themselves, found its corners. Their eyes are eagles now. They move. The sum of those things you know is what they were beginning to forget, and I reach past what I know to remember them. When it was all gone, all of it, there was still a center. They never knew you kept it. When you saw them, you knew how they moved, like bison or grass fire, slowly. So they came, with their names as baggage, their men's names forgotten, and you watched while maps were drawn, and the rain stopped falling. You went running, footprints in the grass, animals in the leaves. My mouth breaks against your language. They were coming. Rising, you speak. The understanding is not words, but split rocks and corn growing. They need to know which way the wind blows. To play the victim, they fought the battle first. You ran bravely. Some tried to make the land grow, but could not understand the way life came from it, and could not understand isolations and distances. Hope, he said.
Time caught up with Chief Dan George. Hard work and old age took their toll. He was ready for his death. He longed to be with his Amy.
Come out and fight! It is a good day to die!
He passed away in 1981. A nation mourned and said goodbye to their old friend.
I was asked to speak at the cathedral. And to me, that was the most beautiful sight I ever did see. 1,000 people again with the one thought and the one feeling. Honoring the one that, someone that they loved. I wanted to go down and open the cuff and say, hey, Dad, you made it. All these guys care for you. They're in brotherhood and unity and love and standing together. Hey, man, that's great. 2 weeks or more before he left this world of ours, he said, I would like if you and your brother Leonard would try to carry on what I try to do, and this is to bring brotherhood and unity among all nation. And I said, no problem, Dad, we'll try. I thought you'd say that. He said, and then when you look upon my grave, you can say, well, the old brother sure tried. I said, I wouldn't say it in those words, Dad. Well, it doesn't matter. He said, I can't see any change or notice any good that I'd done on this earth. I wish he could see the world today, or maybe he does. How much that he done. How many people he guided. And how many people still hold him as a role model. Even in doing the work that he used to do. When they introduced me as the son of Chief Dan George, and the people listen, and their feeling towards me changes so much. Then I say in my heart, thanks, Dad. I'll do this for us.
Danny Boyd was a newspaper columnist in Vancouver. In his obituary for Chief Dan George, entitled Remembering the Chief, poet, actor, defender of his people, Dan George was a true original, Danny tells the following story. I was in the Vancouver Canucks offices before a game when the chief came in dressed in a gorgeous buckskin suit. Very politely, he asked the receptionist, "Do you have some tickets for Dan George?" She asked, "Do you have a reservation?" With a perfectly straight face, he said, "Well, yes and no." Winchy Dan.